Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, correspondent Pete Musto will explain why the graduation rate in American colleges and universities is so low, and what schools are doing to try to increase it. Then you will hear Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. This week, Anna Mateo will tell us about autumn. Or is it fall? And finally, we will present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, we take you back to the middle of the 1930s, when America seemed to be moving out of the worst depression in its history. The dark view that many Americans held during the final days of President Herbert Hoover's administration seemed to be changing. So, you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. So, let's get started. Here's Pete Musto.
Only 60% of students seeking a bachelor's degree at an American college or university finish their study program within 6 years. That information comes from the United States Department of Education. It was part of a report released in May. The report talks about full-time students who attended a four-year college or university for the first time in 2008. It states that 60% of them completed their degree program by 2014. Experts say there are many reasons why this number is so low. But many schools are looking for ways to increase the graduation rate. For example, every American college or university requires students to identify the main subject or major of their studies. After all their requirements have been met, students receive their degree in that major. Some universities require individuals to declare a major at the beginning of their studies. Other schools let students wait until their second year. Changing majors is also acceptable. But some experts argue against changing majors. They note it may cause students to take more time to complete their degree program. However, a new study suggests that students who change their majors may be more likely to graduate. The Education Advisory Board released the report on the study last month. The board studies higher education and tries to help American colleges and universities make improvements. The study was based on information gathered from over 78,000 college students. It looked at the graduation rate of students who changed majors within the first 4 years of study. On average, their graduation rate was between about 4 to 6% higher than students who never changed majors. The report also suggests that changing majors within the first 3 years of study has little to no effect on the average time it takes students to complete their degree. The EAB's senior director, Ed Vennett, wrote the report. He would not comment on whether or not college students should change majors. But he said that about 80% of students do change at some point. Vennett also said it is not completely clear why changing majors might help students. But he thinks some people become more invested in their studies once they have had time to decide what they truly want to do.
Students who chose a major early on, maybe they didn't have full information about what they wanted to do. Maybe they just picked something that felt familiar, or their parents pushed them to something, wherever it might be. But maybe they didn't make a full choice early on. Those students were only perhaps just kind of attached to their major, versus students who either wait and explore a little bit longer or have declared something, explored further, and found something else that they like even better.
Vennett added that the Department of Education's graduation rate information is not completely correct. It only includes the rates for students studying for the first time, not for those who have changed schools. These students represent about 40% of the university population across the United States. The real 6-year graduation rate is only between 53 and 55%, Vennett said. He said that it is difficult to understand why the rate is so low. Some students leave school because of poor academic performance. Others leave because they lack the money to pay for their schooling. And others leave because they feel they are not getting enough in return for the high cost of higher education. No matter the reason, Vennett said, this is the biggest and most complex problem facing higher education. I'm Pete Musto.
Thanks, Pete. Now, here's Ana Mateo.
Now, the VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories. This is the program that explores the origin and uses of popular words and expressions in American English. Today, we are going to talk about autumn. In half of the world, summer has come to an end. Swimming pools have closed. Children are back in school. The days grow shorter and the weather cooler. In many parts of the United States, trees appear on fire as their leaves turn brilliant shades of gold, orange, and red. From the Pacific Northwest to New England to the Mid-Atlantic and Appalachian states, the autumn leaf-changing scenery is breathtaking. Autumn is also called fall. This is probably because it is the time when trees lose their leaves and they fall to the ground. During fall, children around the United States love to gather leaves into large piles and jump into them. But why do we have two names for one season? In the English language, calling the season autumn first began in the 12th century. But the word was not commonly used until about the 16th century. This is about the same time that people began using the word fall to mean autumn. However, even earlier, the season was called harvest. In the early days of the United States, autumn was a time for preparing for the winter months by collecting and preserving food. People gathered corn, nuts, and berries. They also dried and salted meats to feed them through the long, cold winter. In modern times, refrigeration, grocery stores, and pizza delivery help us survive through winter. But in autumn, we still need to prepare. If you have a fireplace or a wood stove in your home, you will collect, chop, or buy firewood. You may also need to prepare your home by fixing or weatherproofing doors and windows. If you have a car, you make sure the tires and fluids are also ready for the cold winter months. These preparations are called winterizing. Actually, many people winterize their wardrobes, too. They put away their lightweight summer clothes and flip-flops and bring out their coats, sweaters, and boots. To prepare for the winter months, some animals gather food. The squirrel is well known for its skill in this activity. Squirrels gather and store seeds and nuts in their nests. They search the ground for fallen nuts. They pick nuts from tree limbs, sometimes throwing them down to the ground below. This hoarding helps them survive the winter. And it gives us a common expression. To squirrel something away means to save it for future use. Things you squirrel away become your stash. We often use this expression when talking about money and food. But any resource you may need later can be squirreled away. For example, a child might squirrel away chocolate, hiding their stash from brothers and sisters. This guarantees the child can satisfy their sweet tooth at any time. Unlike squirrels, you can squirrel things away during any time of the year. Also, unlike squirrels, who are furry flurries of activity during the autumn, many people slow down during this time. The expression autumn years refers to the later years of a person's life, especially after a person has stopped working. For example, she worked hard her entire life. She saved her money and invested it wisely. So she was able to enjoy her autumn years in comfort. She was finally able to travel around the world. This time of life can also be called twilight years. Regardless of your age, autumn can be a sad time for gardeners. People who spent the entire summer cultivating their gardens may feel sad to see the empty garden beds of autumn. The poem September Tomatoes is for those people. The whiskey stink of rot has settled in the garden, and a burst of fruit flies rises when I touch the dying tomato plants. Still, the claws of tiny yellow blossoms flail in the air as I pull the vines up by the roots and toss them in the compost. It feels cruel. Something in me isn't ready to let go of summer so easily. To destroy what I've carefully cultivated all these months. Those pale flowers might still have time to fruit. My great-grandmother sang with the girls of her village as they pulled the flax. songs so old and so tied to the season that the very sound seemed to turn the weather. As summer ends, so does this episode of Words and Their Stories. And like summer, we will return. Not in a year, but rather next week. I'm Anna Mateo.
The autumn leaves drift by my window. The autumn leaves of red and gold. I see.
Thanks, Anna. Now we present The Making of a Nation. By the middle of the 1930s, America seemed to be moving out of the worst depression in its history. Most people supported the so-called New Deal policies of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. The dark view that many Americans had of their country and its future during the final days of President Herbert Hoover's administration seemed to be changing. People began to believe that the United States was facing its problems with energy and hope. This week in our series, Harry Monroe and Jack Weitzel tell us more about the New Deal programs of President Roosevelt.
The change could be seen in the way that Americans were moving away from extreme political movements of both the right and the left. Many decided that the best solution was to work through the existing political system. Most importantly, Roosevelt's continued experiments with different programs showed Americans that they did not have to blindly follow political or economic traditions. For years, most Americans had accepted the basic ideas of traditional free market capitalism. But as the Depression began, a small number of Americans became interested in the economic ideas of Karl Marx. Roosevelt believed it was best to travel a path between these two opposite ideas. He basically supported the free market system, but he believed government also had a right and responsibility to act when needed, and he supported new government controls in such important areas as banking, transportation, agriculture, and oil production.
Some Americans did not think it was wise or even possible to mix traditional free market capitalism with government intervention or socialism. Former Republican Treasury Secretary Ogden Mills put it this way: "We can have a free country or a socialist one. We cannot have both. Our economic system cannot be half free and half socialistic. There is no middle ground between governing and being governed, between absolute rule and freedom." Many leftists and socialists agreed with conservatives that it was impossible to mix capitalism and socialism. One leftist publication wrote, "Either the nation must live with the sadness of capitalism, or it must prepare to replace capitalism with socialism. There is no longer a practical middle path." However, Roosevelt and his New Dealers happily rejected these arguments. They aimed the country between rightist and leftist extremes, and created a whole new set of rules for government, the economy, and democracy.
Most Americans supported Roosevelt and the Democrats as they experimented with new solutions to the problems of the Depression. They elected Democrats to a large majority in Congress in 1934. 2 years later, they re-elected Franklin Roosevelt to a second term in the White House by one of the largest victories in American history. Roosevelt's big victory made him stronger than ever, so he decided to fight the part of the government that had been blocking many of his programs, the Supreme Court.
Most of the 9 judges on the Supreme Court in 1936 were conservative. They had ruled that many of Roosevelt's most important New Deal programs were illegal. Now, the judges were preparing to decide the future of programs to help old people, labor unions, and others. And there was nothing the president could do under the American system of government. So, Roosevelt called for changes in the system. He asked Congress to reorganize the federal judicial system, and he asked for the power to add several new members to the Supreme Court. In this way, Roosevelt hoped to gain a new majority on the court that would support his views.
Most Americans liked Roosevelt, but people of all opinions feared that the president was trying to destroy the careful system of checks and balances in the federal government. They agreed with him in opposing the court's decisions, but they accepted the right of Supreme Court judges to rule as they thought correct. For this reason, the nation rejected Roosevelt's plan to add new members to the court.
Roosevelt's unsuccessful effort to change the Supreme Court came at the same time as the economy began to get worse. Many Americans thought they had defeated the Depression in 1935 and 36. There was steady economic improvement. Some bankers had even begun to fear that the economy was growing too fast. These bankers called on the nation's central bank, the Federal Reserve Board, to control the expanding money supply. And the Federal Reserve acted to limit the amount of money in use. At the same time, the federal government began reducing the amount of money that it was spending, and it launched the new Social Security tax on workers' incomes. The effect of all these government actions was to limit the amount of money being spent by the government, companies, and private citizens. As a result, the economy began to fall once again into depression.
In August 1937, stock market prices began to fall sharply. In 7 months, the price of stock for the General Motors Corporation fell from $60 to $25. The United States Steel Company stock fell all the way from $121 to $38. In fact, the stock markets lost in 9 months about two-thirds of all the gains that they had made so slowly and painfully since Roosevelt took office. Americans had supported Roosevelt's New Deal program because it offered a solution to the Depression. Now that program seemed to be failing.
Historian Frederick Lewis Allen remembered those dark days of 1937. Goods sold slowly, Allen wrote. Businessmen became frightened and reduced production. 2 million men were thrown out of work in the space of a few months. They became less able to buy what was for sale. The terrible circle of the falling value of the dollar moved all the more rapidly.
The new economic crisis hurt Roosevelt's popularity, and it came at a time when he faced growing opposition within his own Democratic Party. For several years, conservative Democrats from the southeastern part of the country had supported Roosevelt. They liked his leadership and the power that he brought to all Democrats. But they opposed many of his more liberal or experimental social policies.
As the economy and Roosevelt's popularity fell, many of these Southern Democrats began to openly oppose his leadership. They voted with Republicans on important bills before Congress. Roosevelt became very angry about the new opposition from within his own party. He began to intervene personally in Democratic Party primary elections in 1938. He told party members in several states that they should only vote for candidates who would support his New Deal policies. Roosevelt's opponents accused him of interfering in local politics, and Democratic voters agreed with these criticisms. In almost all cases, they rejected the candidates supported by the president. A few months later, voters in the general election gave the Republicans major gains in both the House of Representatives and Senate.
In most situations, such a change in support would have signaled the end of a president's power. If people will not follow, a president cannot lead or be elected. But such was not the case for Roosevelt and the United States in the late 1930s. It was true that economic and political troubles were not solved. But another crisis was growing larger every day, making these other problems seem less and less important. The crisis was in foreign policy. Adolf Hitler and his Nazi party in Germany seemed ready to make war on Europe. And Japanese forces appeared to be planning new aggression in the Pacific. Americans could no longer just worry about their problems at home. A dark cloud was forming outside their door. That will be the subject of our next several programs. That's our program for today. We'd like to hear what you think of it. You can send us an email. Our address is learningenglish@voanews.com. Or send us a message through our website. Just go to learningenglish.voanews.com and click Contact Us. While you are visiting our website, you can also read and listen to longer versions of the stories that you have just heard on this program. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today.